This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 2nd at 11:03 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like everything. Everything might have changed. Who knows these days?
Really, that's the truth. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly view of Ohio politics and all those snollygosters or shrewd politicians out there. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, how do you collect signatures for a petition drive during a stay-at-home order? Spoiler alert, you can't. And that's a big problem for ballot initiatives.
It certainly is. But first, it's time for Wine with DeWine.
Good afternoon, everyone. Wanted to start today with a really kind of good news story about how one family was able to celebrate a very important day in spite of what is going on with the coronavirus.
That is, of course, Governor Mike DeWine giving his daily, or just week daily, I guess, at this point.
No, it's been every day of the week.
Yeah, you're right, it has been. He's not tried to have it on Sundays, but we have had it. This week, Governor DeWine took on the FDA in regard to the Battelle technology to sanitize PPE. He closed schools for another 3 weeks. He also, as of Thursday, seemed poised to lock the state down even more.
Yeah, of course, we record this podcast Thursday morning, and things may have changed by the time you hear this, so it's a few hours before his daily briefing. On Wednesday, he seemed ready to extend the state's stay-at-home order. He seemed ready to order churches not to hold large in-person worship services. And he also seemed to be ready to get tough on those so-called essential businesses who remain open.
Look, this is a national emergency. This is a state emergency. What people do in their own life usually is their own business. But when that, what they do in their own life endangers other people, we have to take action.
That answer was in response to a question about why the chain Hobby Lobby reopened its stores around the state. Crafting evidently was an essential business, at least a Hobby Lobby, for a few days. Attorney General Dave Yost sent a cease and desist letter to get the stores to shut down, and the owner of the chain eventually complied late Wednesday.
I wonder if Dave Yost is a crafter.
He's a piano player. Maybe he's an artistic guy. I wouldn't be surprised.
Anyway, it was a big move for him, I think. Let's start with first how the governor is doing. You know, it's been, 3 weeks now since he's been holding these daily briefings, and 3 weeks since he, you know, ordered bars and restaurants to close and the schools, and then this complete shutdown of the state. You know, I think overall he's still getting good reviews. He's out front of it. The news has slowed down a bit at these briefings. It seems like he's looking for things to announce. He shut everything down. I don't know what else there is to announce other than now he's moving to hospital preparedness and how the state's going to deal with the coming surge that they predict is coming.
I think news outlets, by and large, have sang his praises. There was an article in the BBC about Ohio's governor being at the forefront of this whole pandemic.
He was.
We've heard a lot of Democrats even saying they wish that President Trump had handled this as well as Governor DeWine. I think he's, if I had to guess, his popularity rating is through the roof right now.
The Baldwin Wallace poll last week had it at 80%.
Yeah, and I think we can say, without being partisan, that he has been out front, at least in terms of taking action. When, I mean, you know, Ron DeSantis in Florida just on Wednesday issued a stay-at-home order.
I was just thinking that. I mean, the contrast what DeWine did with what happened in Florida, I mean, there's no coincidence. I know we're not supposed to be cynical this time of year or during this crisis, but there's no coincidence that order came after spring break was over.
Right.
Let's be real. In Florida.
I would say Ron DeSantis has certainly not handled this well, at least certainly from a PR standpoint, from a political standpoint. It's been a disaster the way that they had partiers on national TV flocking through the beaches. Even where I used to live in Northeast Florida in the Jacksonville area, there were people on beaches a couple days ago.
Yeah.
I mean, crowded beaches a couple days ago, this week.
And it's only one day, but the stay-at-home perhaps is working. The original projection said that we would have 533 new cases on Wednesday, and the state reported 348. Of course, that's less, so that's a smidgen of good news.
We're flattening the curve at least a bit, it seems.
But you have to keep in mind that the new cases number is very sketchy because why are the new cases increasing?
Right.
Is it because the disease is spreading, or is it because we're testing more? We're still not testing enough, according to state officials. We're testing folks who are at risk and healthcare professionals. So the testing is not widespread. So we really don't know how many cases are out there. But you can look at that number, and it's some kind of a barometer. Unfortunately, the real barometer is the number of deaths and how quickly they increase.
Right. That went up from 55 to 65 on Wednesday. So that is a significant jump. I think health officials would say even this flawed data is a data set.
Yes.
And looking at these numbers is a science of its own. Aside from epidemiology, this looking at these numbers is a science in itself to so-called flatten the curve. And when you have people who lead Ohio State University's Infectious Diseases Institute saying that we are flattening the curve, that is heartening to me. I don't know if we're doing enough. There's some good news going on around the world. China has closed all of its temporary hospitals in Wuhan. There's work on vaccines. Some companies have said they've developed antiviral drugs. We're at the very beginning of what could be a horrific situation in Ohio. As the news anchor, if you've been listening to 89.7 NPR News, I've really been trying to sprinkle in signs of hope.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard these days. I think that's what Mike DeWine is trying to do. We played that folksy cut of him. Yeah. He begins each day with a little lighter sign of hope. And he ends each news conference with a sign of hope when he can. And I think that's what he's trying to do. He's kind of that fireside chat mode that he's in. He's giving us bad news, clamping down on things, but also giving us signs of hope.
This really is new territory for a free market Republican governor. He's using his power, the authority of government, to interfere in the private sector. And he seems that he's really struggling with it. Like on Wednesday's, quote, order that commercial lenders defer small business loan payments for 3 months. It seems simple, right? Small businesses must defer loan payments for 90 days. But the order, quote, requests commercial lenders defer the payments. That led to some confusion, which reporters tried to clear up.
Can you clarify the small business order that you mentioned? Is it directing lenders to take 90 days, or is it just asking them?
That's kind of both, actually. I will let Lieutenant Governor, who's been working on this.
So it's both an order and a request. Those words just don't seem to match. Lieutenant Governor John Husted tried to explain how the order was a request. He was asked what consequences lenders face if they don't abide by the order. Bottom line is they really face no consequences from the state, but small businesses who face eviction can bring the order into court to bolster their case.
Quote order.
Now, there's legal reasons for this, I'm sure, and I'm not an attorney, and I don't want to play one on a podcast, but this seems to be the struggle the governor has had with the stay-at-home order, the essential business order. It's easy to close schools. Don't go to school. That's easy. But when you start shutting down commerce and it affects people's jobs, their livelihood, and it goes against all of his political philosophy to have government interfere in business this way, in the free markets this way, he seems to be struggling with how hard to come down on them. You know, what's an essential business?
If you follow the governor on Twitter, you will see that there are a lot of people who still don't agree with this.
No,
that there's
absolutely.
There's a very vocal minority. I don't know how small a minority. It's a sizable minority, I think I would call it, just anecdotally.
It's around 35%. It's the same 35% level that supports President Trump no matter what, and it's that level.
Yeah, there's a lot of people think that this is much to do about nothing. There are still people who compare this to the flu. There are still people who think that we should just open everything back up and see what happens. And, you know, as some people on Fox News have said, that maybe a lot of older people might be willing to sacrifice themselves for the economy.
Yeah.
That sentiment is out there. Again, it's a minority, but Governor DeWine has to balance that. Those people vote, too.
Oh, yeah. And I think most, like I said, the approval rating is 80%. But, you know, you saw the unemployment claims today.
Upwards of 10 million in the past 2 weeks.
Almost 300,000 just in the state of Ohio. I mean, it is affecting a lot of people. And all we can hope is that it's a short downturn and we come back quickly, as President Trump has said that it will. So let's hope he's right on that count.
Okay, let's try to go back to when things were normal.
Remember the normal days?
The good old days of February when all we had to talk about was impeaching the president, going to war with Iran, how Democrats were poised to nominate a socialist as their nominee.
Damn, it seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Right.
Okay, also during those days of yore, several groups here in Ohio were launching efforts to get on the fall ballot. There was the voting reform question, which became a group of questions. There was the recreational pot effort. And there was the effort to increase the state's minimum wage to $13 an hour by 2025.
Of course, to get on the ballot, all those groups had to collect hundreds of thousands of signatures of registered voters by July 1st. It was going to be tough enough already, but then you order everyone to stay home until who knows when. It becomes virtually impossible, and many times it becomes illegal to knock on people's doors.
Yes, and that prompted the group pushing for the minimum wage issue to go to court and ask a judge to change the rules. It asks the judge to extend the deadline, lower the number of signatures needed, and allow for the group to collect signatures online. Joining us now to talk about this is James Hayes of the group Raise the Wage Ohio. James, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
And you're on the phone this time. We had you in studio last time.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore.
We can't
do that right now
anyway, but it's good to have you back. James, how you doing, first of all, personally?
You know, I'm hanging in there personally at home right now with my wife. We're expecting a baby boy later this year, so very excited. And also, this is, you know, kind of a nerve-wracking time to be pregnant. So
we can imagine.
Yeah, but I wish I could be with you all today in the studio.
All right. Well, same here. We wish you all the best, and your wife the best, and your soon-to-be-born son all the best. First, let's talk about how your drive was going before the shutdown. How many signatures had you collected? How was it going?
It was going pretty well. You know, I don't have the total number at the top of my head, but we were collecting about 7,000 or 8,000 signatures a day. We were working with a sort of both a paid program and also a volunteer program, having, you know, hundreds of canvassers out across the state on our paid side every day, and also working with volunteers and organizations across the state who were, you know, beginning to collect signatures, but really, you know, starting to gear up for a larger volunteer drive that we were unable to fully launch.
Yeah, so you getting to that end, James, what are you doing now? What does your drive look like now? Are you guys able to do anything, really?
At this point, you know, we're not really able to collect any signatures. But pretty early on, we decided, for public health reasons, to slow down our signature collection and then eventually to stop entirely, both wanting to protect the public and also our canvassers and, you know, the volunteers going out into the field. You know, we had particularly been looking at primary day as a prime opportunity to collect signatures from Ohioans going to cast their ballots at polling places all over the state. Particularly, you know, we have to collect 442,000 valid signatures of registered voters. And so that's a golden opportunity that day to collect those valid signatures. So we were kind of going all over the place. And now we are working with lawyers, trying to figure out if there's a way that we can get some relief on the deadline and also on the required number of signatures we need to turn in, as well as some other things, so that we can hopefully still qualify for November.
Yeah. You know, this is terribly unfair, but it's unfair to a lot of organizations, arts organizations, businesses that have to shut down. It's just a crazy, unforeseen circumstance. What is your legal basis for asking a judge basically to suspend state law to allow you more time, allow you to collect fewer signatures?
Essentially, you know, we feel that the requirements that we have to face right now pose an unduly burdensome threshold on what we have to be able to produce in light of this pandemic. This is such an unprecedented crisis. As you know, as you said, every single industry, every single Ohioan is deeply impacted by this. And this was not on anybody's strategic plan at the beginning of the year. We might have to deal with something like this. We haven't dealt with like anything like this before. Clearly, you know, seeing how we've had to postpone and move our elections we're dealing with unprecedented situation after unprecedented situation every day now. So we are going to court, and we think essentially Ohioans' First Amendment rights are being infringed upon by the unduly burdensome requirements in light of this pandemic.
James, as you know, these requirements are enshrined in the Ohio Constitution. They're not just simply a law. Do you have any concerns about how ingrained these are in the state constitution that it would be harder for a judge to grant you this what really is obviously an exceptional circumstance here, but do you have any concerns that maybe the judge would just say, this stinks, but my hands are tied?
Certainly. We definitely have concerns that might be the outcome. We felt we owed it to the million-plus workers across the state who would stand to get a raise. If we're successful in passing this initiative, to try. We think right now, as particularly as you were talking about earlier in the podcast, we have 10 million unemployment claims, so many people who are on the front line of this crisis, our retail workers, people stocking our grocery shelves, healthcare workers, everyday heroes that we all depend on, but whose work isn't valued enough. We need to ensure that everyone has a living wage as fast as possible. And we think raising wages through this initiative would be a great first step in Ohio. Fundamentally, we need a bottom-up response to this crisis, not a trickle-down response. So we're pursuing every avenue we possibly can.
Speaking of that,
to reach that goal.
Speaking of every avenue, have you approached the governor? Have you approached the legislature? I mean, they did cancel an election and changed how we vote in the state for the primary. That's a pretty dramatic step.
It's still unbelievable to say, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, have you reached out to the governor? Is there any way he could, again, we're not a lawyer. We're not lawyers here on the podcast. Is there any way they could issue an order to say, okay, we delayed the election until April 28th. We can collect signatures by mail or by email or over the internet. Any word from the administration or the legislature?
We haven't, I don't think, had any formal conversations with the governor for sure or the legislature about this. I think we were hoping they might do something regarding the petition gathering efforts in the legislature when they were addressing everything with the election, but they did not. So, we'll see how things play out in the courts and we'll kind of take it from there.
If things don't play out in your favor in the courts, or maybe even if you just, is there any chance you just say, you know what, we're just going to wait till next year? Or were you hinging your hopes on a presidential election? What do you do if you're shot down?
I think, everything's on the table. So that would have to be a decision that the steering committee of the campaign would make together. That would be a committee decision. We'll just have to assess all of our options and see what seems most viable at every stage of this campaign. And I feel like it's like that in every aspect of my life right now. Things that I knew were true yesterday aren't true tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. That's why we opened the podcast that way. Who knows what could be happening tomorrow?
Right.
I know I get a little introspective every time we do this podcast now, but this is just an incredible once in a lifetime thing to watch. We canceled an election. That's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's astonishing.
I certainly hope it's once in a lifetime.
Yeah, right.
Indeed. I mean, it's certainly the first time in our lifetime.
James Hayes of the group Raise the Wage Ohio, thanks for joining us, and all the best to you personally and professionally.
Thank you. Yeah, y'all take care throughout all this, and best to you and your families.
Okay. Thanks again, James.
Thanks, James.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, time now where we would normally do our Snollygoster of the Week award, recognizing the shrewdest, most self-serving political move of the week. It was, it's been a really a wealth of content over the time of this podcast, but this week it goes to?
April Fools. If you've been listening the past couple of weeks, you know we have suspended the Snollygoster of the Week award because even we have to admit our politicians and public officials have been doing the right thing, putting public good ahead of personal political gain.
We sure have. So we are awarding our Mugwump of the Week award. A Mugwump is the opposite of a Snollygoster. A Mugwump is a politician or, in this case, you might say the wife of a politician.
Yes.
who puts the public good ahead of political ambition.
This week, the award goes to Ohio's grandma.
And I've been making lots of recipes. Actually, today I'm going to post two recipes that I made for soup. One of them is for black bean soup. You know, if you went to the food bank or something, or if you bought a lot of beans, this is kind of an easy recipe that takes three cans.
First Lady Fran DeWine, who is frequently at the governor's side in any event, but she has appeared at his daily briefings a couple of times over the past couple of weeks, and her role is basically to say, you know, hang in there.
Soup. We can all get behind soup, can't we?
Yes.
It's a nice crisp fall day, or spring day. It feels like fall. It's a nice crisp spring day out there today here in Central Ohio. It's soup weather.
What's more comforting than bean soup?
Chili? Maybe potato soup?
Right.
Maybe some loaded potato soup?
Anyway, she's also had advice for keeping kids busy while they're cooped up at home. And those recipes. And you can see those recipes at her Twitter feed. If you're not following her on Twitter, you should do so. It's mm-hmm. at Fran DeWine, and that's where her recipes
Ohio's are. Ohio's grandma. Very wholesome content to follow Fran DeWine. They do seem very grand, apparently, both of them. They both
yes.
give up that very
Well, they got a
comforting.
Lot of grandkids. So.
They do. They have the big ice cream social every year. I don't yeah. know if they'll have that this year.
I'll be honest. As a hard news guy, I just want information every day from these briefings. It takes a little bit of patience for me to get through the folksiness. I want the information, but mm-hmm. a lot of people out there appreciate the folksiness, appreciate the sort of it'll all be all right tone and by all means, we should have that.
As the Brits say, keep calm and carry on. That's my only advice to our listeners. There's not much else we can do. This is
do you
all...
know they never hung those signs during World War II?
They didn't. That's some revisionist history.
No,
there.
They had. That was a slogan, but they had a paper shortage because they were rationing stuff.
Sure.
So they didn't hang the signs.
So if we get to a paper shortage, we know things are really bad.
We have a paper shortage.
We do have a form of a paper shortage.
A different type of paper shortage.
Well, anyway, everybody
take... What if Fran DeWine can solve that problem?
That would be a Herculean task. That would get an 100% approval rating.
That's right.
Until next week, everybody, please take care of each other. Just be calm, carry on, wash your hands, stay home as much as possible. We'll get through this. It's just a weird time, but we'll try to guide you through it. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.